Down to business on News Talk.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland. We understand business. Choose the bank that's here to help you rise to today's business challenges and tomorrow's.
A very good morning to you wherever you are. You're very welcome to Saturday's Down to Business. As always, this is the show that gets behind how things really work in Irish business. We're live here in Bray this morning at the Martello Hotel on Bray's seafront. It's a beautiful morning. We're broadcasting our special roadshow, Your Town, Your Main Street. And we've been off the road for quite a while, so it's great to be back. We've assembled our town team. We're going to be visiting Bray and they'll be giving us their findings about what they saw here earlier in the week. We'll also be talking to some local businesses about what it's like to live and work here in Bray. I'm going to be chatting to the CEO of Ardmore and Troy Studios about basing an international film and production facility out of Bray. Musician Phil Coulter will be stopping by for a chat, and Bray-born Professor Luke O'Neill chats about his early days here, right here on the seafront. And there's lots more beside, including Wicklow native Luann Parle. She's going to be playing us out at the end of the show. For many people, when they hear the word COVID or vaccinations, they'll automatically think of my next guest. He's a global authority on the pandemic, but he's also a Bray native and a singing professor. Yes, I'm very happy to welcome to this show Luke O'Neill. He's the Professor of Biochemistry in the School of Biochemistry and Immunology at Trinity College Dublin. And he's a Bray native. Good morning to you, Luke O'Neill.
Good morning, Bobby.
Welcome home, as they say.
Oh, I'm delighted to be back. Thanks for the invitation.
No, great brilliant. To see you, Luke. And really, maybe to put you in context here, we're sitting in the Martello Hotel. We're looking out across the promenade on the beautiful sun on the water there.
Yeah.
You were involved in the early days here with your father in a deck chair rental business. You have to tell us about that.
I was, yeah. My dad had a deck chair business. He was a bit entrepreneurial, you know, with his mate called Pat Mooney. When I was in college, they gave me a job on the deck chairs, Bobby. Isn't that great? So
wow.
I made money from my college years on Bray Seafront, hiring out deck chairs. A long time ago now, in the 80s.
And tell us then about those early days in Bray. Like, we're looking at a Victorian holiday destination where people came out for the day. Like, used people come and be in their best suits when they went to the beach? Like,
they did, in their droves.
Bring us back to those days.
Yeah, on a Sunday. You know, the day trippers from Dublin would come out in their droves. We had 500 deck chairs, you know.
No
on
way.
A good day, we'd rent out the whole Esplanade would be full of deck chairs.
And how much was a deck chair to rent?
50p for the day.
No way.
The old days, and the old money. But yeah, they wore their Sunday best, you see. Didn't want to sit in the grass, you know.
Wow.
So there was a need for deck chairs back in those days.
And the business then evolved. It had a putting green as well, is that right?
It did. Yeah. Indeed. Any Bray native of a certain vintage would remember the putting green as well. You know, so these are memories for me and my generation.
Yeah. And so when you went to college then, did you get the train in every day?
I did, pre-dart. Yeah. Bobby, pre-dart.
Yeah,
the dart came in 85 in my last year,
definitely,
and I got the dart then. But it used to be the old diesel train. But you're right, though, the view was fantastic, wasn't it? We didn't appreciate the time.
Yeah.
That Bay of Naples view is spectacular.
Unbelievable.
Coming out this morning on the dart.
Yeah.
It's amazing, isn't it? Yes,
yeah.
Every day I was on that.
Yeah, no, what a great day. Now, there is a story with your father, who's the late Kevin, your father. He employed Phil Linnett in an offshoot of the business in Stephen's Green. Is that right?
Well, in Stephen's Green, the deck chairs as well, you see. It was in two places, right? I'm watching Top of the Pops. I was 15 years of age, watching Top of the Pops. Thin Lizzy come on, and my dad goes, "That guy worked for me." And I said, "What?" "Oh, yeah, it was a teenager. I used to employ him on the deck, collecting deck chairs in Stephen's Green." I said, that's the coolest thing ever. So my dad knew Phil Linnett. Isn't that a great claim to fame?
Now, staying with music just for a moment, you said that, again, when you were in college, you were one of those annoying guys who took out a guitar at parties. We have to hear more about that.
I did indeed, in the good old days.
And you still do it, I hope.
I still do it occasionally.
Yeah, yeah.
But the best part is that 84 was a great summer, Bobby. Every day was sunny, all the deck chairs, and I made loads of money, right? And my dad said, "Now, make sure you keep that for the college year ahead." Guess what I did? I bought a Fender Stratocaster guitar.
No way.
I came home with it. He said, "Are you a bloody idiot?" He says, "You know, you've blown all your money on this guitar." I thought, "Oh, Dad, I'm 20 years of age. I want a guitar." You know, so I had the guitar for a few years.
Luke, I want to ask you about business as well, because this is a business show. If we talk about, you've been involved in a lot. I know you've been academically based, but yeah. you've always been in business in one way or another, and you've had some successes, maybe some that didn't work out so well. Tell us about InfluZone and how that worked out so well for you and Matt Cooper, Professor Matt Cooper.
Yeah. Well, I'm always interested in making my research real. You know, if you make a discovery, how do you make it real? You license it to a big drug company, maybe, or you form your own company.
Yeah.
And I formed three companies, you see. Two failed, Inflazome. One, it was great, you know, we kept going, basically. Yeah, and last year, we sold our company to Roche. We've two...
To say we're in the Martello Hotel here.
That's
just
a sound effect, isn't it?
There's another 10 euros gone out of somebody's pay packet.
We've two anti-inflammatory medicines, Bobby, which
right.
cure, hopefully, or treat diseases like arthritis, for example, or Alzheimer's, actually. And Roche liked what we had. And you got to get into bed with the big guys. They've got deep pockets to do trials and so on. So Roche came along and bought us. And now they're in the clinic with our drugs, which is tremendous.
And was it a classic case of, you know, you sell and you're no longer involved? Or is there ongoing involvement for a period of time?
Ongoing involvement. They need me, thankfully, still.
That's good.
Advise them.
The black box. You've got your own black box.
I'm trying to push it through, you see, yeah. as well. So it's good to be still involved.
And tell me about another company, Citrix.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I did a sabbatical in 2016 in GlaxoSmithKline in the UK. And we spun a company out of GSK, if you can believe it, called Citrix. And again, that's developing new anti-inflammatories. They employ about 30 people. Two of my lab in Trinity are funded by Citrix. The students go over and visit. Great exchange between the company and the university. So another company that's underway. Let's hope they're looking for the same exit, as we call it, in envy at Inflazome. They're hoping I'll hit pay dirt twice, basically. So
okay.
You never know.
And this success, and as you say, and you honestly and candidly say that there's been a few blips along the way.
Yeah.
Does it change things for you, or do you
no.
just still go to work every day
still
doing
every
what
day.
You do?
Still every day, same
yeah.
old thing. Why would I stop, Bobby?
Yeah.
You know, we're not there yet. I mean, Roche, we're hoping they'll get a new medicine, but they could fail. You know, keep going, try and get new ideas.
Luke, you're here in your hometown, and you know, as you reflect maybe back on the last 15 months, the last 2 years maybe, your own world has probably changed significantly. You've become a national figure. You're a renowned expert on all things pandemic. And people turn to you because they trust your advice. Is there a burden of responsibility around that?
Just to get it right. I'm only doing it to get the facts out, you see, and get the information across to people. So when I'm on with Pat and so on, make sure you're telling the facts as they are. You know, massive appetite, Bobby. Unbelievable, for obvious reasons. You know, everybody wants to know about it. And the big hope is, let's get out of this as soon as
yeah.
we can, you know. And secondly, I'm over the moon, Bobby. The science has delivered four highly potent, efficacious, safe vaccines in the course of 9 months. Can you believe it? When Pfizer got their first report back in November, we now have these vaccines. So
yeah.
I'm overjoyed in a sense, because science has actually delivered on this great, great promise.
I think one of the amazing abilities you have, and again, it's just not to patronize you in any way, but the ability to talk science in layman's language is refreshing, I have to say. It's absolutely refreshing. And people buy into that because you're talking a language they can understand.
Well, it's not that difficult, Bobby. Just don't use too many technical terms. Jargon is atrocious, isn't it? You know, so try and avoid the jargon is the simple message there.
What do you see or what do you think will be the great legacy of the pandemic, Luke?
I think it's that science has delivered. That's the bottom line. A fantastic performance by the big drug companies. And most of those vaccines were developed in universities and drug companies together. It's a great collaboration between the two. 2.6 billion people have had one shot of a vaccine in the world now. And amazingly, 60% in Ireland have had one shot. What a great achievement. And they're safe and highly efficacious. They are the only way out of this pandemic, really. So the legacy will be science triumphing, I guess, over this virus.
And do you think it prepares us, I suppose, for another pandemic or a different pandemic?
Very much so.
Okay.
And the G7 have announced this preparedness campaign to get ready for the next one, kind of, and don't let it happen again. In other words, put the fire out much more quickly from what we learned from this big pandemic.
Okay. I think when you look here at the Martello Hotel,
yeah.
and you look at Bray as a place, is it a place that brings back happy memories?
Pure joy.
Yeah.
Come to Bray. That's my message. You know, come to Bray. Lovely, lovely summer's day. You look great, Bobby, in your Hawaiian shirt, by the way.
Doing my best
wearing
to
the
kind
cover,
of
you know.
Light up the seafront.
Oh, I can't. My fond memories of those years on the deck chairs on Bray seafront for three summers. It's like idyllic history for me. So I'm very happy to remember it.
Well, listen, it's great to maybe have a slightly different conversation with you this morning. Luke O'Neill, ladies and gentlemen, what a legend. Thanks for joining us here this morning. On each of these shows, we always get our town team to take a look at the town that we're in from a retail and urban planning perspective. So I'm delighted to be joined this morning up here on the stage by retail consultant Eddie Shanahan and also by Andrew Griffin of Urban Agency. He's an architect and urban planning expert, and they both have been taking a look at Bray over the last while. Andrew, I'm going to start with you because you're a Wicklow native, number one, and secondly, you spent the lockdown period right here in Bray, so you know this town well. So you might give our listeners maybe just a sense of how the town is configured, what it looks like, how it sort of works from a business perspective, from a retail perspective. Just give us an overview, if you would.
Thanks, Bobby. We have a great main street here. So there's a classic main street in Bray, and then parallel to it is the seafront, and then it's got sort of a series of parallel streets which kind of draw you between the two. So it's got a great structure in terms of a town. You know, it's brilliant things and quite different places. So it kind of keeps it interesting as a place.
Yeah, because if you look at, I suppose it maybe even the old Victorian buildings that were here. You know, when people came here, that Luke O'Neill was telling us about earlier, on their day trip, that part of Bray is still very much here. The promenade again
Exactly. The whole seafront is really a classic Victorian seafront, isn't it? With this amazing bench and these beautiful houses that all open out, and the great, you know, pubs and hotels that have been here for you know 100 years. So it really still has that great vibe to it. And it's been done up over the last couple of years with the, you know, the seafront's been really invigorated and it's kept its history as well.
Could I suggest to you that the pandemic, although it was unkind to most aspects of society, that the fact that people maybe weren't travelling to town, that a place like Bray could have actually benefited on the basis that there were more people here ordinarily during a working day than there would have been, I suppose, pre-pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, I was here for the 2K lockdown, and so I got to see every inch of this town, and it was, you know, it was so vibrant. It was great. You know, every morning you'd be down swimming, you know, you'd be on the main street sort of going to the coffee shops when you could or to the local retailers. I mean, it's a busy town, it's a vibrant town, and it's I think it's one of those kind of self-insulated places that sort of has everything it needs, you know, from an amenity point of view. I mean, the main street has incredible retailers, you know, Ballon Jewelers, there's an amazing creperie there, there's great things that happen on the street. The seafront itself probably got more vibrant in the pandemic, you know, people walking their kids, going to the local playground. It's a great meeting spot.
I see the council as well. When I was walking down the promenade this morning, again, are repaving the part of the promenade. So there's obviously some infrastructural work happening to improve the promenade.
Yeah, it looks like they've done a really good job, I think, on the whole promenade, and it's maintained really well, you know, which is great. I mean, it's really, really well used morning, evening, you know, during the daytime. So I think they've done a good job down here.
All right. Okay, Eddie Shanahan, again, you've been with us on many of these exploits. Eddie, you went to Bray last week. How did you get on?
Very well. I enjoyed my visit. There's a reasonable retail offer here. Great potential for a full day out, maybe a bit of shopping, lunch, a stroll along the waterfront rather than just a quick visit. But I would say maybe it needs some more signage just to pull it all together. I came in from the north side of the town, and there's a long, long run in there. Salmon Interiors, Little Bray Barbers, the first evidence of retail that I came across. Very pleased to see the street bins carrying a message, stay local, buy local.
Yeah.
And then I came to one of those older type shopping centres. I call them outdoor shopping centres. We have a car park on all the shops on one level. And there's a reasonable offer there too. Super Value, Peter Mark, Euro Giant, Starbucks, Frascati Shoes and others. Car park there was a little bit dull, I suppose. Maybe a few more baskets of flowers and that might have cheered it up a little bit. And then you come to the main street that Andrew described there with its side streets. There was a great buzz. It's very obvious there that there was a mix of locals and visitors. This is a town that people live at the centre of it. And as I said, there's a reasonably comprehensive retail offer. Great coffee bars. Opticians, beauty salons, home stores, pharmacies, bookshops, jewellers, florists and so on. The fashion offer is not great. Milan and Company being, I suppose, the outstanding exception. And the menswear offer I thought was very poor. But I've got to give some very special mentions to some people. Dubray, for its absolutely pristine premises. Hayes Family Butchers, very enticing window display. Taylor's Hardware, where you'd find just about Anything.
I love those kind of shops.
Anything, absolutely. Vance and Wilson Pharmacy and the superb Get Fresh Market on Galtrum Park. Now, there's a gem, Galtrum Park. I think it has really great potential as we reopen with its coffee shops and its market. It's like one of those beautiful European squares you'd see. It was absolutely fantastic. And I suppose if there was a downside to my visit, it's my old issue. And despite the COVID restrictions, there was a non-existent welcome in many of the shops and service was a bit disengaged. And Frascati Shoes, though, was the exception. And, you know, with the downturn, we all became more of a local community in our pods around the country. And we re-engaged with our local retailers. And I think that's something that people, not just in Bray, but shop owners right across the country, need to embrace, and we need to embrace that opportunity to be one community working together.
And is that a legacy of the pandemic, Eddie, that, you know, I think that people have genuinely made a real effort to support local, and even by virtue of the fact that you said so many people are living here in Bray, de facto they're going to support local because they're not going anywhere.
Oh yeah, well, not only are people supporting local, but more people are working locally now. So they're out on the streets at lunchtime, you know. And but I noticed even in my own local supermarkets, you know, where normally the manager would grunt at you as he pushed you out of his way, now everybody talks to you, and you know, and I think we need lots of that, and it's to be encouraged.
Andrew, how does one go about, from an architectural or planning perspective, go about linking the various precincts? Can you tell us how that works, or what's best practice in that regard?
Bray, in a way, is like a fantastic shopping centre. It's got two great anchors, the main street and the seafront, and all the shops in between. So I actually think it structurally it works really, really well from that point of view.
Yeah.
I think there's a couple of things it could probably do. How you get into the town, like most towns, is a problem. It's got a really bad congestion problem, you know, especially with schools in the morning. So I think if there's a couple of things the council could do here, one is to improve the bike lanes, you know, and make it safe and put the infrastructure in for, you know, kids to come with their parents to school in the morning. I think we've got Bray Head here. We've got the Bay of Naples on the way in, but we've got a little bit of Rio de Janeiro as well.
Yeah.
It's one of the most incredible amenities that you could have in the centre of a town. At the bottom of it was an old swimming pools in the 1930s. That's fallen apart. I think the council should regenerate that, especially with the growing sort of sea swimming culture that's happening.
Well, we're getting that in Dunleary with the new baths.
Exactly.
If it ever arrives,
and there should be one here as well. There's for kids. I mean, the playgrounds are good, but they could be a lot better. And there's not a lot for teenagers. No skate parks. You know, no parkour parks. So I think they could do some work there.
Yeah. Eddie, is it like a lot of places that the retail drag has become too long? In other words, that a place can be over-retailed. You described there your run-in. If you go talk one end of town to the other, could the retail footprint be shorter?
No. I think it works. You know, that's the natural drag of the town. But and why it works is because of all the coffee shops.
Yeah.
Along the way, and they punctuate the retail offer. I think the retailers themselves, though, can engage with their customers through some better window display as well. Surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly, the NCBI charity shop where they sell the clothing, that had a really good window display, as did Deadhead Barbers. And there was a jeweller's there, Patrick O'Kelly's, that caught my eye. So, no, I think it's a very vibrant main street. And my main issue with the disconnect was between the main street and the waterfront, finding my way there. And my grandparents used to live here when I was a child. I used to come out and visit them. But
you probably rented deck chairs from Luke O'Neill.
Maybe did. But that was the disconnect that I found most disconcerting.
Andrew, just finally to you then, on the future of Bray as you see it, if we're sitting here in 5 years' time, will we be in a very different Bray, or would you see it being more of the same?
I think it's changed a huge amount since I was a kid. I think it's an incredible town. You know, I mean, it's a foodie heaven. It's got such great amenities. I think, you know, a few little special ingredients in this place would be one of the best towns in Ireland.
Yeah, okay. Well, look, it's great to hear your endorsements, and indeed good to hear it painted in a very candid way by yourself, Eddie. The good, the bad, and occasionally the ugly. So again, Eddie Shanahan, a retail consultant, and Andrew Griffin of the Urban Agency, thanks for a great review and a view of Bray and what it's like to shop here in the retail and planning precinct. The seafront is busy, the Martello Hotel is hopping, and I want to go first now to our host here this morning, John Duggan, owner of the Martello Hotel. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Bobby. How are you?
John, thank you very much for having us here this morning. Just maybe you might be better at describing the vista here for our listeners, but you know, we're on the seafront, we're outside, we're socially distanced, but the operation here is hopping.
And it has been since Monday, or last Monday when we opened, Bobby, so which is fantastic. So I'd like to thank all the customers who've come into us and for their patience. Obviously, there's a bit of a challenge with lots of new staff and kind of just getting back into the swing of things. So it has been tough, but it's been absolutely fantastic. You can look around, you know, it's what, quarter to 11, and we're pretty much full. So
yeah,
breakfast, lunch, dinner, it's the same story. It's great.
It's interesting, John, isn't it, that almost opening and closing a business is a real challenge. But when you're open, you can sort of solve many of the problems. That in even just operationally, as you said there yourself, you know, if you haven't been open for a period and then you all of a sudden demand exceeds supplies, it can be challenging.
Absolutely,
yeah.
And that is the challenge. Obviously, what's happening now in the hospitality industry, staff are very hard to get, especially chefs. They're like hen's teeth. So when you do have your menu and you're all ready, you don't realise how busy it's going to be. So obviously, you know your dinner time is going to be busy, but you don't realise your lunchtime and especially your breakfast. So all of a sudden, you've got this massive, massive surge of food to be taken out. So I had to reduce my menu because it was just becoming too much. So it is.
Tell us about your operation, John. Obviously, we're here in the Martello Hotel. But again, your business interests are much wider than that. Family business.
Yeah. We have a couple of different places all along the seafront of Bray. It's not just myself. I have two brothers involved as well. So between us, we have the Martello... We have Platform, Boxburger, PG, Smash, Foxburger, Joe's Chicken, the Harbour Bar, and Shark Bait. So there's a few places there.
And was it always your strategy when one expands to expand kind of locally, where you could basically have the management resources on site? Like lots of places lots of businesses might have chosen to go to a different town. You've expanded your interests here, predominantly on the seafront.
Yeah, we have been asked in lots of different places, and kind of, are you moving into Dublin? Are you moving to Grey Zones? And so on and so forth. But we decided to stay in Bray for exactly that, from management, just for ease of service. We can move staff around. We can move product around.
Yeah.
We know Bray inside out, and it's a big town, like there's 33,000 people, so it's extremely vibrant. I suppose with the takeaway model, especially over the pandemic, that brought us into Greystones, Kilmechanic, Enniskerry, and out towards Shankill, Ballybrack, so we had a much wider remit then.
Okay. So. Well, listen, it's great to be here with you. We'll be back to you in a second. Let's bring in Carl Kelly, the PRO for Bray Chamber. Carl, you're very welcome.
Good morning, Bobby.
There's a term called, not day trippers, but Bray trippers. Who and what are they?
Yeah, Bray trippers are people who basically come to Bray for the day. So they come and spend the day in Bray, they'll walk the seafront, they'll go for food, but they generally don't stay. So you either come in for the public transport or the Dart, or they'll drive in. So those are our Bray trippers, as we like to call them.
But isn't the value of the Dart is so underrated, as in having the connect? Like I got four stops, as I said this morning, here from Dunleary in 20 minutes, and just the most relaxing, pleasurable journey that one could make.
It's funny, when you think of the Dart, you always think about going into town. You never think about the Erskine, so going to Bray or Howth or whichever direction. But a lot of people would get the Dart out to Bray. They'd walk from Bray to Greystones on the Cliff Walk and then get the Dart back into Bray. We try and get them to do the opposite way sometimes, because you can get the Dart to Greystones and walk back to Bray and then stay and eat, have your lunch in Bray.
Right. And tell us then, as the PRO for Bray Chamber then, how are your organisation feeling about Bray? What are the challenges that you might have as an organisation? What's the upside?
So what we're kind of hearing from our members is obviously it's been challenging for 15 months or so, but definitely the last 6 months with the third lockdown, it was a lot harder for a lot of businesses general in terms of cash flow and just morale generally, trying to get back up after two lockdowns. But definitely over the last 2 or 3 weeks, we have seen green shoots with the open hospitality. It's got a lot of businesses like John's business are definitely booming. I actually haven't been able to get a table here for the last 2 weeks, so I'm happy I'm here now.
You want to have a word with the gaffer?
Yeah. So that's been that's kind of what we're hearing. There's obviously generic things that are happening in town as well that were happening before COVID even hit. So we have the building of the Bray Shopping Centre in the centre of the town. That's been 30 years in the development.
Yeah.
And it's we can see it now. It's nearly there. And we know the developer Oakmont are building again. We know that there's rumours of tenants coming in as well. And
so when will that be live?
We're hoping, what I'm hearing is that it will be sooner or later in the year. And we know Press Up Group, who are going to run the Stella Cinema and Stella Bowl that are announced for there, they're going to bring an elephant to Castle. So it is going to be a big development. It's going to be a great boost for the town, particularly around the experience-based town, so
great.
Where people come in. We're hoping that it's
that's something to look
here.
Forward to. I want to bring in a local business now, Linda Fitzpatrick from La Belle. Linda, you're very welcome to the programme. Firstly, tell us a little bit about your business.
Okay, so I have a shop on the Queensborough Road and it's a gift shop, but it's ever-changing and growing with the times. I suppose it's more like a lifestyle shop,
okay.
What you call it. So we go with the trends and anything that's out there that's up and coming is basically, and we try and keep it niche, you know, a little bit quirky as well.
So when you say ever changing, did you have to make many changes in the last 15 months?
Oh.
Yeah, you did, I'd say.
Stress city.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose really, like, the first lockdown was total lockdown, nothing happening, just, you know, stay at home, look after the folks and do whatever needed to be done. And then as it kind of progressed, we got to do a little bit of trading. When I say a little bit, I mean small, but enough kind of to do, you know, feel like you're doing something. So deliveries locally and stuff like that, you know. And then the last lockdown, got the place painted from top to bottom, got stuck in and did it ourselves, you know. And again, deliveries and a little bit of online over Facebook and Instagram. Didn't go online as in website. Have it kind of more or less ready to rock, but didn't launch it. I found what was happening, you know, ideally looking at it from a business point of view, to me it's all new. I'm not really very techie, but getting there.
Yeah.
And it meant having to have double stock in.
Yeah. You know? So that online, in your case, was kind of a different business.
Absolutely.
Is that the way you looked at it? It
would be a totally different business,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's interesting, isn't it, that, you know, online is seen as the great panacea,
yeah,
but it often isn't that.
Not always. I mean, a lot of my customers that come into me aren't online people. They like the whole idea of walking into a shop, having a look around. It's the social aspect of it and everything else as well.
Yeah.
You know, we have a huge following of local people and people that aren't local that come into us, have been coming into us for years, to myself and Pauline. And you know, it's more than just picking up stuff and walking out the door. We can even buy for our customers. Like, if I'm away buying and I see something, I go, I know who'll like that. You know, so that's kind of the way it is.
And that's experience of 23 years working here in Bray. And
that's
again,
it.
Knowing
yeah.
your customers
yeah.
well, as you do.
That's it.
John, could I come back to you and ask you maybe about Bray as you see it for the future? Interesting to hear our town team analysis. Both Eddie and Andrew seem to be very optimistic about the future of Bray. Would you share that optimism?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Bray is a bright future. We're born and bred. Five of my sisters and brothers live here. My parents' house is just up the road. So we've always been invested in the town. So it's not a... We never lease anywhere. So we've always bought and we're here to stay. Bray is just, it's going to get better and better, the development down the harbour. You can see yourself, the sea. I don't know when you were last in Bray, but it's getting better and better.
I was here last week.
Good man.
Up in Kilrothery.
Excellent.
And I had a look around, because I wanted to get a sense of the place.
Right.
Now, I would know Bray reasonably well, but I wouldn't be here that often. But I made it my business to come out last week, just to have a look around. Maybe I could ask you, Carl, about the Bray Air Show, which we loved. And I used to come down in the boat and look at it from the water. When will we have that again?
Yeah, so obviously Bray is a town that we like welcoming people, whether it be St. Patrick's Day or the Pinnacle of the Air Show. With all these events, because they're open to the public, it's very hard to say when it won't be happening this year, but maybe next year if we get everything into it. So that's what we're looking at.
Okay, and last word to you, Linda. Are you optimistic now that you're back open? You must be delighted.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's great to see everybody coming back in again. And, I mean, the whole thing about it is, like, you have people that haven't been outside the door for the whole duration of it. Yeah. And everybody has a story to tell. But just to see the pure joy on their faces as they're coming in and looking around, it's great.
Well, listen, welcome back.
And
well done to you. Yeah. So, Linda,
you.
Carl, and indeed John. And John, thanks again for hosting us this morning. We've lots more to come. So we're here in Bray, we're live for your town, your main street, and we're having a fascinating morning here. Just to set the scene again for our listeners, the sun is glistening across the water, across the promenade. As we look out here from the Martello Hotel, the place is hopping. We've met all the great and the good from Wicklow. In the next hour, I'm going to be meeting Phil Coulter, Elaine Geraghty, who's the CEO of Ardmore and Troy Studios, and I'll also be up on a zip wire in Kilrodery House, something I made earlier in the week, which gave me a good look around the town. So, before the news, we were chatting to some brave businesses. I want to talk to some more now. And first up, I want to talk to Dermot Malone from a business here called Absolute. They're involved in brand development, design, signage, marketing, basically the A to Z of business needs. Dermot, you're very welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Bobby.
Now, I was just giving an overview of your business there, but you decided, I think, when COVID hit, that you had to change your business model, and the change brought about an opportunity. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, well, I suppose really our COVID story is about the 4 days that really, I suppose, saved our company from closing their doors in the early days of the COVID pandemic. And kept everybody employed throughout ever since. I mean, essentially, we, if everyone remembers back to that Thursday when on Taoiseach announced the first set of restrictions and closed schools, and there was a lot of fear and a lot of uncertainty. And all that week, we were receiving phone calls from clients putting jobs on hold and cancelling orders rather than placing orders. The following day, we got a call from a client of ours, a pharmacy, Paul Burns, in a pharmacy there in Bray. And he was panicking. He did not know how to keep customers in his shop a safe distance apart from each other. So within an hour, we popped down, we had a look, we stood back and we watched. And we had a conversation with him about how we could put in a queuing system that would work to keep people that safe distance apart from each other.
And bear in mind that this was all new. Like nobody...
There was no solutions.
You know, we kind of got used to the yellow COVID signs and the social distancing 2 meter yardstick and that kind of stuff. But that all came from nowhere.
Well, essentially, that came from that day.
Yeah.
Because we met and we had a discussion and we went away. And with our graphic designers that night, we came up with some prototypes. And then we printed off a few. And the next morning, on the Saturday, day two, if you like, we put down the first ever queuing markers on the floor, those stickers that you're familiar with, that,
yeah,
that everyone in the country would be familiar with. And we tested them, and we got feedback from customers and from the shopkeeper alike, and we tweaked it further. So we did another little production run that night, but we knew we had something that was bigger than one shop. We knew we had something that every retail, every location needed, a safe way of keeping people that 2 meter distance apart. And a way that could be washed, a way that wouldn't be a trip hazard, a way that would be very instantly recognisable the moment a person stepped inside the shop.
So the stickers on the floor were basically your idea?
Correct.
Okay.
So we developed the solution, put it down in his shop, went away, and then we immediately started working on a brand for this solution, for this QSafe marking system. And we immediately got our development team to build a website so that we could start selling online, and then...
Well done.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great story. And again, it's good to see, to hear a story that, you know, that basically you're looking at disaster in the eye, and all of a sudden you come up with something that enhances, not only saves you, but enhances your business.
Well, to cut a long story short, we got an order from Musgraves then immediately by the Monday. to supply all of the centres and all of the supermarkets.
Well done. Okay.
And that kept us alive all the way through last year.
Well done, Dermot. That's a great story. I want to talk to Linda Jones now from the Travel Boutique. Linda, travel, my God, it's been a challenging time.
Yeah, it certainly has, Bobby. I think it's the worst business you could possibly have during the pandemic.
No. Yeah, because, again, if we think about it, the only calls you were getting in the early days was people looking for refunds.
It was, yeah. We had to get people home as well, and then it was starting the cancellation and refund process.
Right.
And nobody really knew how long it was going to go on. We all just thought it would be a few weeks or a few months, and that you'd get people travelling by the autumn, but it just kept having the boundaries pushed every single time.
Looking at the papers this morning, you know, the news on travel, we're not quite there yet, but we have great cause for optimism, do we not?
We certainly do. No, the best news ever was vaccinated people can travel from the 19th of July.
Yeah.
It's a little bit trickier for people under 30 that haven't been vaccinated yet, or families travelling with children that aren't vaccinated. But no one's being discriminated against once you have a negative PCR test or you've had COVID. You can still travel.
And I know there was some controversy, and I think rightly so, about the Chief Medical Officer's comments about, Holiday in Ireland.
Yeah,
were you upset by that?
Yeah, we were, really. I know, he has a very nice man and has to be respected. He's got us all through the pandemic, but I think sometimes the government should take charge a bit more, and they're the ones that should be making announcements, not our Chief Medical Officer, because we have signed up, along with 27 other countries, to join in with the EU protocol and to allow travel. And we are all able to travel from the 19th of July. Now, it's going to take some time. We still really need to get the UK market back, and we need to get Australia and America and international travel back. It's going to take another few months for that all to progress. But getting Europe back is a huge start for us.
Yeah, and Linda, we talk about pent-up demand. There's got to be massive pent-up demand in your business.
Yeah, I've had people crying when they book their holiday. They're so excited
and
to
we
go.
Say, and to use a travel agent, because a travel agent will sort out all the things you don't want to be sorting.
Yeah, I think people are really seeing the value of an agent, because you book online and nobody cares whether you get your money back or they don't have your back, but your local agent is the one to go to.
Yeah, well, I'm delighted for you, because God knows that you need a bit of optimism, and it's been a long 15 months for you, wish you well as your business emerges.
Thank you very much.
Now, Simon Lynch is with us from Wicklow Wolfe, a great company here, brewers in the county of Wicklow. Tell us your story, Simon Lynch, with your partner, Quincy. What a great business.
Thanks a million, Bobby. Thanks for inviting me along here this morning. Yeah, a bit like Dermot says, back in March of last year, Quincy and I took the staff onto the floor, the production floor, to tell them, we just didn't know what the future was. 55% of our business was on trade, and great customers like the Duggins here in Bray, and across the whole island of Ireland, 32 counties we are distributing to and further afield. But scary times. What we didn't realise the value of was the decision we'd made about 6 months before, the canning line that was standing behind us as we talked to people. We were really fortunate last year and continued on into this year that all our business has, from the on-trade, has translated into off-trade as business. So we haven't lost. We had a good year.
Is that right? Last year. And again, just let's explore that for a second, Simon. So the standard keg business per se that would have been that you would have been delivering to pubs and that completely vanished for obvious reasons, but it was displaced by people buying more craft beers in supermarkets and off licenses.
That's correct. And for us, in a way, you know, when people pick up a can off a shelf, there's much more of a brand awareness. People see the can, they read it. In bars where it's busy, you know, they go for a beer. And sometimes that's lost a little bit. The likes of, as I say, the Duggins in the Harbour Bar and the Martello and their various bars are really good about telling our story. And that's really important to us.
Yeah.
It's been challenging in many ways. But in terms of business and our revenue, we've done actually okay.
Yeah.
And our exports have started again quite strongly this year.
And do you think then, in terms of the way people consume alcohol, that has changed forever? Do you think that the on-trade will come back as vibrant as it was? Early indications appear to suggest that the outdoor dining scenario seems to be working well.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think when bars do open again and they're allowed people inside again, if there is going to be a rush, it's going to be like cattle out to green pasture. I think it'll probably stabilise again. I think there'll be a combination of the two. People have probably found that, you know, home dining and entertainment has a bigger place in their lives now, but I think definitely the on-trade will come back. And we're looking forward to that too.
Yeah. And were you originally based here in Bray?
We started our business here in Bray. We're very proud of Bray.
Yeah.
As I say, a lot of the local businesses and the likes of O'Brien's have given us a lot of support here and helping us to get started. It's a great town. I'm born and bred in Bray. I'm very proud of it.
That's great. Well, listen, well done. You're a great ambassador for the county and indeed for the town, and delighted to see businesses such as yourself staying in the game.
Brilliant. And can I just say that we've opened a tap room down in Newtown Mount Kennedy, our new premises, where we'll be open for tours next month.
Great.
Please God, if restrictions are lifted as they're supposed to be, and we're available there for coffee and growler fills and cans.
I'll be down.
You're more than welcome.
Now I want to bring another special guest to the show, Bray Barbie. Anybody ever hear of that? Well, Dee Dooley is going to tell me all about it. Good morning, Dee. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Now, tell us all about the Bray Barbie that we see sitting very eloquently there on the podium.
Well, she was found at the beginning of lockdown down on Bray Beach, washed up, and I took a few photos and just put them up. People liked them and said, oh, she should have her own Instagram and Facebook page. So the Bray's Barbie page was born. But I mean, I'm not going to just do like, you know, just that. So basically, she promoted the town, the local businesses, charities. She became a very special part. She became the town's tiny ambassador and mascot, so much so is that they actually awarded her an Endeavour Award for all the help she did within the community.
Isn't that great? Well done. And that was what a great initiative. And again, you know, something thinking creatively, thinking differently, as you say, promoting the local businesses through the use of a Barbie. And I have to say, she looks pretty smart.
She's lovely. She's become a little time capsule for the pandemic. And she retired to the Harbour Bar now, where anybody can see her there as just a little.
All right. Well, you heard it here, folks. And I want to thank all my guests.
Thanks a million.
Dermot Malone of Absolute, Linda Jones from the Travel Boutique, Simon Lynch from the Wicklow Wolf, and indeed Dee Dooley there for telling us about the Bray Barbie. I've been talking to the great and good in Bray earlier, where we spoke to Luke O'Neill, a Bray native, but I'm going to talk to one of Bray's famous residents, and he's a long way from Lisfannan in County Donegal, but he's been here for over 30 years. Phil Coulter, good morning and good welcome.
Nice to see you, Bob. The only thing that has added to the exotic feel of Bray and the seafront is your shirt. I mean, that just sets the tone.
One thing I won't do is come underdressed for the occasion, so you have to make an effort.
Very impressed, Bob.
And speaking of dress, you gave me a beautiful album, the Coulter Collection, and look at the sharp dressed man in that. So
gotta do your best.
You gotta turn out right, don't you?
Well, vinyl is the new trendy thing. So you know, it's now at a stage if you don't embrace that vinyl, you're kind of left behind. So even for an old dog like myself, being part of that whole vinyl thing, it's now growing. They're becoming kind of collector's items.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm of an age where, you know, you went and bought an album and you brought it home and you opened it up and you read all that stuff.
All the sleeve notes and all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Downloads are not the same. It's just not the same at all. I'd love to have that thing in my hand.
If we go back a number of years, Phil, you were inspired, I think, by Buddy Holly. That was what brought you to music. And you've had, like, such an interesting journey from the swinging 60s in London, 1967, Puppet on a String, the work with Cliff Richard, congratulations. These were big, big hits. And I think we forget, you know, we forget now, like, how many records would Puppet on a String have sold?
At the last count, probably 7 or 8 million.
Wow.
But more importantly, it had like 127 different versions, you know.
Yeah.
That's the thing. As a songwriter, we all aspire to write what we call pension songs. You know, songs that keep going.
I'd say that was one, was it?
Well, that was one. And, like, Congratulations is a song which has fed, clothed and educated several of my children. So those were glory days. You know, you won the Eurovision back then, Bobby. You could put the kettle on for 6 or 7 million records.
Yeah.
That's the way it was. I'm very fortunate in the era that I was born, you know, because I was in my mid-teens when that whole rock and roll, you know, that revolution with the likes of Buddy Holly that you mentioned, Elvis Presley, Fats Domino. Before that, there had been pop music. Surely there were pop songs, but they were all kind of cute. You know, songs like How Much Is That Doggy in the Window? You know, or She Wears Red Feathers on a Hooly Hooly Skirt. Do you remember that? So Presley and Fats Domino, those guys, just changed the face of pop music. So I was very fortunate that that was my education, you know. So I embraced all of that and went to Denmark Street, Tin Pan Alley in the 60s. And that was a glory time. That was, you know, my contemporaries there, the other songwriters, we were all, you know, we were all aspiring songwriters with a lot of dreams and without an arse in our trousers, you know, but we had all that, we had that ambition. And those were the guys who wrote the great British songbook, you know, I mean, so it was a great education. I have a lot to be grateful for, but the timing was so important.
Yeah, and how, like, when you think about it, when your sense of timing to be, I suppose, a budding songwriter in the swinging 60s in London, as you say, and then to work with people like the Stones and all the people that you were fortunate enough to work for. But, you know, you talk about reinvention, and that's something you've been a master of. When you think about back over your career, you know, even working with the Bay City Rollers versus, you know, writing Ireland's Call, or these are all sort of different musical things.
Yeah, exactly.
Different and musical journeys.
The thing is, you can't allow yourself to be defined, you know. I mean, if with the success of like Puppet on a String or Congratulations, then in 1970 I was the arranger and the publisher and the producer of All Kinds of Everything, which was another winner in 1975, the soon-to-be my wife, Geraldine Branigan, was representing Luxembourg, and we came fifth. So right then, if I had thought of myself as a Eurovision songwriter, say, well, this is what I do, you know, this is my area of specialty, I'd have been dead in the water very shortly. Equally, when I've had the hits with the Bay City Rollers and Kenny and Slick, we had a whole stable of boy bands. Again, if I'd allowed myself to be defined as a teeny bopper writer, producer, I'd have been dead in the water. So you just, the one thing, here's the thing, Bobby, you cannot at any stage subscribe to that sense of entitlement.
Yeah.
Because you had a hit last year doesn't mean you're going to hit this year, you know.
Yeah.
Because you were able to sell out a venue last year doesn't mean you're going to be able to sell out this year. You know?
Yeah.
You got to keep on top of it. You can't take anything for granted. You just got to keep, you know, got to keep
picking up. But I think that again shows that you've got an astute eye for the business that is music. Yeah. And you probably learned the hard way in the early days about not making money on songs or jobs, and you get smarter. But it is important to have that sort of business nose as you move from reinvention to reinvention.
That's something you have to learn very fast.
Yeah.
One of the great fallacies is that it's a lot of very talented people subscribe to is that because you're talented that the world owes you a living. Nothing could be further from the truth. The talent just maybe gets you in the game. It's all the hard work and everything else that keeps you in the game. That's the secret. That's it. You just got, you know, I was asked recently, how do I attribute my longevity, being 55, 56 years in the music business and still being active? And I said, that's easy. I turn up for work on Monday morning.
I really get that sense that it's a work ethic that never leaves you.
Well, the whole lockdown thing, for example, you know, you could have curled up in a ball in a corner and started like feeling sorry for yourself. Again, the only thing to do was to embrace the whole online thing, which what we did. We invented this thing called the Lockdown Lounge, where every Saturday afternoon we did like 40 minutes of playing a few tunes at the piano, telling a few stories, reading from my memoir, Bruised Never Broken, and just reaching out to a whole new audience. I tell you, Bobby, you're looking at an old dog who had to learn a lot of new tricks.
Well, isn't it great that you're able to do that and to embrace things like, you know, and there's technology and there's all sorts of stuff you'd say that you could just as easily say, you know what, that's a younger man's game. You don't do that.
No, I mean, again, one of the other spin-offs was the memoir Bruised Never Broken was out last year, but then the publisher said to me, with the lockdown, there's a big demand now for audiobooks. So I said, well, I'll let you do one.
Yeah.
so we went into the
Sign
studio.
Sign me up.
Yeah. So we went into the studio and, Christ, I mean, it was 12 hours of reading or listening in the audiobook. So it's a lot of work. But again, a great challenge, something which I hadn't done before. And that's, you know, there's nothing like attempting something, even at this advanced stage for me, to do something that you haven't done before. You know?
You once said, Phil, that the pursuit of happiness is a pointless exercise because it's not an ongoing condition. Tell me more about that.
Well, I think there's a lot of people that are chasing happiness. I think happiness comes in drips, you know. There are times when, you know, all the planets are in a line, all the ducks are in a row, and everything is, the sun is shining, everything is, you've got to grab that moment. You slow it down and you savor it, because that's not something that endures. I think for the long haul, if you've got some like fulfillment in your professional life and some contentment in your personal life, well, then you've got it made.
Yeah.
Don't think you're going to be happy 7 days a week.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably, it's probably a good, a really good sort of way of looking at things. Tell us about Bray and what brought you to Bray. You've been here a long time.
Yeah.
What attracted you to come here first up, first day with Geraldine, and again later the six kids?
With the six kids, we brought the six kids here. In fact, our youngest was a babe in arms when we came here, and that was one of the reasons. We just wanted to bring our kids up in Ireland. Geraldine's from the north side. I'm from Derry, so I had no, you know, Northsiders feel very strongly about the north side. So I didn't comprehend any of that stuff. I was just looking for somewhere that was going to fit a big family, where we could educate them, where we'd be close to the sea, where it would be close enough to Dublin Airport. Because you remember the days when you used to get on planes, Bobby, and fly places, you know, like America.
But did you kind of happen on it then, or did you?
No, we did. We did some serious research.
Yeah.
We settled on Bray because it ticked so many of the boxes. And I have to say, it's been one of the smarter moves that I've made in my life. Bray's been very good to us. You just look around you, see. I mean, Bray's at his best now with the sun shining. But even, trust me, on a wet and blustery and windy winter morning, there's nothing like walking along that seafront.
Yeah, no, it's great. And you've moved to a smaller location in Bray now, because you've downsized a bit.
Yeah.
So you were able to, again, reconfigure to match your needs.
Well, I figured that moving house is a big enough trauma without moving area, you know. And we like it in Bray, so we you know, we're close to our same friends, our same, like, you know, the local chemist, the local dry cleaner, the local grocer. There's still the local butcher. They're still our guys. For that much, it's meant a lot to us. Our kids as well. You know, our kids in the four corners of the world. You know, Australia, New Zealand, Los Angeles, Texas. But they still love Bray, you know. They had a great childhood, you know, great childhood with all of that out there. Ryan, my son, who's a professional goalkeeping coach with Houston Dynamo, he learned his soccer here with St. Joey's Boys. Dara, who's a sea captain in New Zealand, he got his taste for the sea right here.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Great. And Phil, if we come back to reinvention then, it's been really, really difficult for people in your line of work. Again, there, a lot of their income stream has effectively been turned off. There's massive pent-up demand for entertainment, for song, for theatre, for art. Will things come back to normal relatively quickly, in your view?
Well, we hope so. I mean, we are at the mercy of the powers that be in terms of, you know, the restrictions, etc. But right now, we're actively filling out our diary for our Irish tour in November and December, which had to be abandoned last year. But we're staying positive, Bobby. We're filling out our dates November and December. Then in January we'll be off to the States to tour there, and hopefully we'll get back to work. But you're absolutely right. It's been devastating for our industry.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel for the small guy, you know, the guy who made the few quid by maybe be singing somewhere like here, you know, in the Martello on a Friday, Saturday night. But that's all stopped. I mean, this guy still has to pay his rent.
Yeah,
you know? He still has to clothe his kids.
Well, look, and we pine for better days. And again, congratulations on your energy, on your craft, your talent. And great to see you here in Bray, your hometown, to chat again. Phil Coulter, ladies and gentlemen.
Great pleasure, Bob. Thank you.
Now, whenever we visit a town, for your town, your main street, I like to actually get out and visit a business. Bray is no exception. Have a listen to this. Now, I'm going to be doing my best Tarzan impression a bit later, as I'll be swinging from the trees here at Squirrel Scramble Adventure Tree Park at Kilrotary House and Gardens in Bray, County Wicklow. They've got more than 50 different challenges to climb, balance, slide or crawl, including 12 zip lines. So we might have a look at one of them later. Today, I'm placing my life in the hands of the owner of Squirrel Scramble, Chris Lang. Good morning to you, Chris.
Good morning, Bobby. How are you doing?
We're in Bray for your town, your main street this week, Chris. So I'm here in the beautiful surroundings here of Kilrotary House, the greenery, the trees, this is a beautiful place to work, first of all, but what have we got here?
Yeah, it's definitely a magic place, and it's very well located close to Dublin as well. We have a tree adventure park in a natural forest with lovely oak and beech trees, and it's a tree adventure park which has, you know, starts at 1 meter heights. It's all wooden platforms in between the trees and different challenges and obstacles to okay. test your skills, and it's, you know, something to enjoy for the whole family.
Now, when did you set this up, and how did the process come about of designing all these wonderful sort of climbing features and zip lines and all that?
We set it up in 2014, me and my business partner, Paul Pascoe. And, we started with just two levels at the time. So it was much smaller, the tree park, and we just built it basically ourselves.
Right.
And, you know, with our bare hands and a bit of a drill and a chainsaw.
Excellent. Okay. Now I'm on my way up to the zip line, and I'm meeting two customers here from what school are we here from, girls?
St. Lawrence's.
St. Lawrence's. Okay. Now tell us a little bit about your experience here today.
Well, it was really fun.
Yeah.
And some parts were scary, but if you just do them, you're fine.
Which ones did you do?
I just did, I went up to level 3.
Right.
And I'm going up to the higher level now.
Okay. Well, I might see you up there, all right? And how did you get on?
Good.
Yeah?
Yeah, I did all of them. Just, we're going up to the higher one.
All right. Well, I might see you up there, all right? Lots of people around the place, lots of kids enjoying themselves. And do they try and work their way up through the levels? Is that how it works?
Yeah, usually it's like if they haven't been here before, they usually start at the level 1 just to build up their confidence and, you know, get used to the safety system to make their way around and to how to work the clips. And then it gradually gets higher and higher. So even it's for people who are a bit afraid, they slowly get used to higher levels. So it starts at a meter, goes up 2 and 3 meters, and only the last two levels, which can't, you know, you won't end up there by accident, they are higher, they are 6 and 12 meters high and a bit more physically challenging as well.
Okay, and the safety system is very impressive. Everybody's in a harness, and then there's two clips of which you can't have both of them on or off at the same time. So you theoretically anyway, you can't unclip yourself.
No, you can't unclip yourself by accident. So it means you're always safe. You know, even if you're a bit nervous, you can't make anything wrong. The system won't let you be unattached from the safe steel cable. It's an award-winning system. In 2008, it won the European Sports Award for safety technology and German technology, so you're super safe.
Okay, let's go. We'll go on up and we'll go for a spin, as the fella says. Now I'm up here.
On 3 meters height.
3 meters height. There's lots of greenery. I'm clipped on and I'm about to do a zip wire. Chris, is there anything I should be worried about here?
No. Just keep holding the bar with one hand from each side and start running at the end so you land on your feet.
Okay. Right then, folks. Here we go.
Enjoy.
Woo! Wow. Ah! Oh, that wasn't the most spectacular landing. I kind of landed on my bum and bounced along the ground a bit. Chris, I won't get many marks for talent, let's call it.
Oh, no, you did great. Don't worry. It happens a lot of times. People just, it's instinct to lift their legs instead of putting them down.
All right. Well, listen, it's been a really exhilarating ride. It's a really great thing you've got going here in Kilrodery House, Chris. You're the instructor, you're the co-founder of the Squirrel Scramble, and I've had a really great day here today. So enjoyed the crack, enjoyed the fun with the kids, and most especially enjoyed all the rides.
Thank you very much, Bobby. Pleasure to having you.
Loads of texts coming in. Thanks for sending them to us. To Bobby, I fondly remember many summers in Bray getting candy floss and chips and beans, going on the paddle boats with my cousin Jean and Aunt Anne, also buying periwinkles in little wrapped newspapers, cones, wonderful memories. That's from Olivier in Rathfarnham. Now it's time for this.
News Talk's Executive Chair.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.
And I'm delighted to welcome to the Executive Chair this week, Elaine Geraghty. She's the CEO at Ardmore Studios in Bray and Troy Studios in Limerick. Elaine, you're very welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Bobby.
Now, you're a long way from Raheny, where you grew up. A very, very interesting career, because your father was in the film business, and you kind of have gone full circle and ended up back. So we'll talk about Ardmore Studios in a minute. But growing up in Raheny, your first job was in the Sunday Tribune under Vincent Brown, which again must have been a great colourful time in Irish media.
There was never a boring day in the Tribune, which Bobby was always closing, but I think lasted about 23 years.
Yeah.
So I probably knew from an early stage, with Dad working in the business when there really wasn't a business, that I wasn't going to have any old normal career. So I've always worked in kind of interesting places that, that were colourful, as you say, and the Tribune was the start of it.
Yeah, and again, like you made your way in somewhere like the Tribune. You started off in reception, but you managed to kind of get an interest in the wider sense of the business, and you were promoted from it within there.
Yeah, that's what happened. I mean, I stayed in the commercial side as opposed to the journalistic side, but we were all on one floor, a big open floor, at a fantastic time where journalism was, you know, Fintan O'Toole, you had Paddy Agnew, all the greats or whatever. So, like, as a young woman going in there, it was fantastic fun. And, of course, we really worked in Toners, because that was our local.
Yeah.
Not really in the Tribune. But there were opportunities presented, and I took them, really. And that was what happened. And it was in the commercial side of things, ultimately ending up looking after the Dublin Tribune project, which was unusual because it was the first sort of free sheet that was a broadsheet. So, yeah, that was the sort of last big project that I did.
Yeah.
And that was probably
one of the reasons that you went to 98FM then, which was your start to a career. And again, formerly of this parish and News Talk, you were the CEO of our organisation. But tell us as well, you presented a breakfast show on 98FM for 6 years, and you said that stopped when the ratings tanked.
Listen, it's all
this
about
the ratings game.
All about
it?
The ratings, Bobby, as you know, and I know. Look, I started to go in and do something completely different, and it was in the early days, hadn't gone on air. They were looking for the girl to work with the guy on the breakfast show, you know, the crew. So they said, you seem like you can talk. Do you want to give it a lash? And I said, absolutely no way. Did an awful sort of a dry run and, you know, went
a
out.
A bad pilot, as they say.
Awful. And drowned my sorrows with an awful hangover the next day. So come out and do it again, have a go. So it worked. And we said, look, we'll do it. If it works, great. If it doesn't, you've got your old job back, which is around operations management. So that was 6.5 years of being sort of fourth out of four in the market, going to number one, going to Italian 90. We went to the Olympics in Atlanta. We did USA 94, madness. And then the ratings did start to drop. And then rather than, you know, give us another go, it said, right, that's it, that's done. But, you know, they like me, I like them. And I said, well, I'll start again. So I did.
Yeah, it can be a cruel place in terms of, you know, your longevity. If you're on air, it's very easy to and it can be hard to recover from a ratings disaster.
Yeah, it is. But I think that for me, it was never, this wasn't the job. I mean, it's not that I didn't throw myself in, as I always do, 110%. But if it failed, I always felt I'd other things I could do. Whereas I think many presenters, particularly in the music side, I think this is what they do. And if there's a ratings failure, it's really difficult to recover from it. Yeah.
Now, I started in News Talk in 2010. You left then, just and again, you took a break from media, and then you worked in ReachOut.com.
Mm.
Tell us a little bit about that. Was it, had you just had enough of media, or was it always there going to call you back?
Well, it was always there, but I'd done sort of 20 years. Not that anybody was counting or giving me a watch or anything like that. Like, I had a great time, and I left on my own terms, and I hankering to try different things or just take a year out, none of which, came to fruition. But I got a call from PwC, and they said, look, there's an Australian organisation. It's an online youth mental health service. They want to have a footprint in Ireland. They want to start. And I went, well, what are you calling me for? Like, how would I know about any of these things? And, well, forget what it's actually about. It's about a startup. It's about putting a team together. It's about generating revenue. So it's a business. And I learned so much, and really innovative. And you talk about how things are done online. Learned a lot about mental health. Learned a lot about working with the HSE, for example, who are now the funders. And I come from a world of entrepreneurship, where everything needed to be done yesterday. And so it was slower pace. So I said I'd do a couple of years. I ended up doing six, actually, because charity work is never done.
Now, you changed jobs. You were the CEO of Screen Producers Ireland, again, which is an interesting organisation. But mid-pandemic, you made the change to Ardmore Again, tell us about how that all came about.
Yeah, well, I mean, like many people in this country, I spent a lot of the months last year in my office stroke bedroom, you know, wondering how we're going to get this industry and your business back to work. And in the middle of it all, I got a call from the very persuasive Shu Nirahalli, who is a, you know, CEO at Ardmore at the time and put so much work into building the business and everything, and said, come out and see me. So I did. Masked on and socially distanced, and there was nothing going on at the time because production had stopped, and said, you know, we talked about the business, about the future, and there is no question about it, about the need for content, Bobby. You know it as an individual, I do, but also as an industry, that's where the growth area was. It was exciting to see what had been done at Ardmore, what the plans were. Wasn't looking for a move, but love a challenge. And I'd been with Screen Producers Ireland, loved every bit of it for 4 years. So I knew a lot about the business. I would have known the producing community. Yeah. I know how the industry works. There's going to be a lot of the stakeholders. Just had to learn a little bit about the studio side of it. So I said, yeah, I'll give it a go. Why not, mid-pandemic? And I started to get to know the M50 very well from Malahide since last November.
And Ardmore has an amazing history as a business, doesn't it? In terms of...
Yeah.
What a great business to join in terms of its legacy.
I mean, absolutely. Here in Bray since 1958, on Herbert Road, so right in the middle of the community with our residential neighbours on each side. We've space at the Film Factory just off Southern Cross as well. So a significant footprint, but very much rooted in the community. Most of the staff, perhaps me and one other, are not actually from here or live here, so I'd be unusual. Many of the crew have grown up here, and there are generations of family that have been involved in the film business. So it's absolutely local, and we engage locally in terms of business and services.
Yeah. And then how's the future looking for that business? It's probably, again, we talked earlier about pent-up demand. There's a lot of pent-up demand now. For content, so
huge demand, and for studio space. So it's absolutely the right time to be in this business, because content has to get made, and really not just the big productions like we cater for, but smaller and other Indigenous as well. What we've got in mind now is, in terms of generally the industry, is how we're financed, and that we've got crew and skills to service it.
Yeah. Now, we always like to ask something a little bit different about our executive chair candidate. Phil Coulter was on earlier. We have a Dana story to link the dots. Age 6, tell us the story about you seeing all kinds of everything.
Yeah, as long as I don't have to do it now. So, Dad was a location manager, production manager and everything else manager. And he worked on a film that's out every Paddy's Day called Flight of the Doves, which had Jack Wilde and about two kids coming across from the UK, travelling across Ireland to find Gwenny, who lived in the West. And on the way, they meet Dana, who just won the Eurovision. So she was singing in a field around a campfire. And anyway, Dad just said, listen, there's somebody coming to the house tonight. And who was it but Dana? But not only that, but every single auntie and uncle that I ever had in the sitting room. So age 6, I was to give a bar of all kinds of everything, and that was how it happened.
Well, isn't that great? Elaine Garrity, what a pleasure to meet and talk to you. Well done on your career so far. Best of luck with Ardmore and Troy. What a fantastic business.
Thanks.
And what a great ambassador for the media industry.
Thank you,
Thanks
Bobby.
For
Best
joining
of luck
us.
To you and everyone in News Talk.
All right. Now, as always, at Your Town, Your Main Street, we'd like to have a local musician play us out. Luann Parle is an old friend of the show. She's a native daughter of Wicklow, who due to COVID restrictions isn't actually here to play live for us, but she's recorded a special song for us for today's show, and she joins me now live from a recording studio where she's busy recording. Good morning, Luann.
Good morning, Bobby. How are you?
Listen, I'm fantastic, but I'm more fantastic having speaking to you. You've got a song for us. Tell us more.
I have, yeah. So this is a track from my latest album, which I actually released last February, and just before COVID hit in March. So a month just before COVID. So this is a track from that album, and it's called Falling For You.
Falling For You. And tell me, just before you play it for us, Luann, how was lockdown for you? I know it's been very, very challenging for anybody involved in entertainment of any type.
Yeah, it's been definitely very challenging, and I think for me personally, the main thing has been just, you know, not knowing when, so not having you know, at least there's a bit of light at the end of the tunnel now, but the uncertainty, you know, not knowing when we can get back out and play. But, you know, with this latest government grant for live venues, it's great that, you know, at least it'll get us going a little bit until, you know, crowds can come back to full capacity. Yeah, but you know, it's I've been busy doing lots of different projects, but it's definitely been challenging.
All right, well, look, we're delighted that there's finally going to be some sort of release for you and that you're going to be back doing what you do so brilliantly. So over to you, Luann, and we'll leave you with this wonderful song you're going to play out for us.
Thanks, Bobby. Thank you.
Whispers in the shadows keep me searching all night. The darkness never brightens, the sun it never shines. And time it moves so slowly, and I'm feeling so blue. I'm falling.
Yes, the lovely and gorgeous and just wonderful friend of the show, that is Luann Parle. Thanks for that, Luann. Great to talk to you again. Now, I'm afraid that's all we got time for today, folks. It's been a pleasure to be back out on the road again here at the Martello Hotel in Bray. A big thanks to everybody here.